Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Now I'm wondering why no one's here yet, so I will let the music play till they get there. Oh, they're coming in now. Yeah, because I was just getting ready to play some music and start planning my next Wednesday class. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm talking to...
Nar Press.
And Victor Rico. Mrs. Mead, are you able to hear me?
I hear you very well, Victor Rico.
Oh, okay.
So, wait a minute. Let me get my notepad out because I have Victor Perez and there's one other person.
It's Abigail Gonzalez.
Who?
Abigail?
Where have you been?
I had sent you an email last week saying I had realized your email like 20 minutes late. So.
Other people came in late last time, didn't they, Perez and Rico?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we're glad to have you with us, Ms. Abigail. Let me get my notepad. So, everybody's doing okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
When you talk, if you have background noise, please mute your phone from time to time, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
It is not disruptive. Wait a minute. Anybody read the 6 chapters? No.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Perez and Victor?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Abigail, did you read chapters 1-6?
I've got to 1-5. I'm reading 6 still.
Okay. All right. Okay, so 11-18. And so far we have Rico, Perez, and Abigail. Okay. Oh, wait a minute. We have some more people that have come in. I want to find out. Let me just ask, who's 7972748? You don't know your phone number? What's your phone number, Rico? The first 6.
It's mine, yeah.
It's yours?
972748.
Yeah, because you're supposed to push number 1.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, who else joined us? 469452.
9228, that's Hildy Rowland.
Good morning, Hildy.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Okay, who else do we have?
Darius Reed, 903-701-4509.
Okay, all right. Now, who wants extra credit today?
All right, man. I'm not a process.
Okay, let's go.
All right. On March 15th, 2008.
Okay, who are
you? Leonardo Perez. All right, March 15th, 2008, on 56th Street on McKinley. In a
Wait a minute. Again, I told you all when you are giving a presentation, you have to be aware of everything around you. And somebody sounds like they're either in their car or they're walking on the street. and so it makes it difficult to hear you. Who is that person who needs to mute their phone? Okay, I'm going to take a chance on muting until I get to the person who did it, and then I'm going to be upset because they didn't tell me. So who needs to mute their phone? Who's outside?
I am.
Victor?
Yes.
Okay. Well, mute your phone when you're not talking so that you don't give him added background, okay?
Okay.
And Perez, you have to be aware that your communication is being compromised, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. In a small little church, university, non-denomination church, was the day that me and my wife got married. Leading up to that day was really difficult for us because of discrimination and racism was really bad still because, you know, this has been almost 8 years ago. Even with my family, it was pretty bad. I remember the day we told my family that we were getting married. Instead of, you know, that happy moment, they say, oh, we're so proud of you, you're glad that you're getting married. It was just more like, why? You know, why do you need to do something like that? So it was pretty tragic. And, you know, it's not the happy beginning, like, you know, what people want. I remember my mom told me that you need to go to Mexico and find somebody else, you know, find someone from Mexico, you know, so they can help you clean, cook, and take care of you. And that, to me, was really sad. And to find out that's what my mom was thinking, you know, about my, you know, my fiance at that time. And then just, you know, because my wife, she's African American, plus she's white and Mexican. And for us, you know, my family was not, you know, traditionally Mexican people. They weren't, haven't been Americanized yet, so they weren't too glad about that, you know, marrying someone else that's been part of your culture or tradition. And so the wedding day was pretty sad for a part of my family, because on her family she has 8 uncles and, you know, aunts, and her side of the family was huge. A lot of people were, you know, sitting on her side, and on my side it was just me, I mean my mom, my stepdad, and my 2 brothers, and my aunt and uncle, and their, you know, my 5 cousins. That was it. When I, you know, I have a big family, a huge family, and none of them didn't even show up or even acknowledge that I was getting married or, you know, anything. It was really charging to know that, you know, how racism and discrimination was pretty bad. But nowadays, you know, it's okay. You know, it's not that much how it was before. But, you know, we had to struggle just to be married. And but, you know, in the end, you know, it was worth it. Everyone came around and, you know, embraced my wife, embraced, you know, my other immediate family now. So I'm pretty proud of what I did, and I never regret it.
Okay, very good. Any questions or comments? We lost 469-826. Who did we lose? Rico's here. Perez is here. Abigail, are you here? Hildy?
I'm here.
Darius is here. So it must be, we must have lost Abigail.
Oh, I'm here.
Okay, who is that I lost and just brought back?
Me. It was Abigail.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, anybody have any questions or comments for Perez?
Yes, Hildy, Roland. How long did it take until your family, accepted your wife and the marriage, and how did they deal with their own issues around, you know, a mixed-race relationship?
I think it took basically the day I joined the military and deployed, and I kind of just told my wife, look, you're going to live with my mom. you know, that's one way they can understand, you know, who you are, and you know, get to see my, you know, their little grandkid, you know. So I think from that day on, they kind of just accepted her, understood, you know, how she was and how much she cares about me. So I took them after that day, you know, after the deployment, they got comfortable with her. But in the beginning, it was just, it was hard because they just didn't understand, you know, not be, like now you have to be Americanized, and they weren't Americanized at all. You know, they don't know about the customs and traditions. They just used to what they, you know, been through.
Hmm. Is your wife, is she light African American or dark? Do you all know about color?
Yeah, she's light. She has African American hair, that for sure. She has a nose. My kids didn't get that much trait, but my son has the hair, and my daughter has a little bit part of the nose, but that's basically it.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, and it's something that we deal with. I came to Dallas over 30 years ago, and I remember working at a bank, and it was me and one other black girl and like maybe three Mexicans, and one of the Mexicans told me, we were at lunch, and she said she could never bring me home because her family would not accept me. And it wasn't like we were trying to do anything together. She said that they didn't like African Americans. And at the time, she was eating some of my food, and I said, well, give me my food back. But it was something, because me coming from the Northeast, the growing up, the Spanish-speaking people growing up around me were Puerto Rican. And then I would come to Florida to visit my relatives, and the Spanish-speaking people were Cuban. And then I moved to Texas, and they were Mexican. And one thing I think is really important, and that's a part of the communication, is that you understand the difference. You should all practice not just learning different languages, but learning things that help you to understand different cultures. Because that's what people get upset about. They say Americans are so arrogant because we don't, you know, we just group everybody together. Oh, they're Asian. Oh, they're Latino, you know, and not even getting to understand them. So that's a really good lesson for your family and for everyone. I think for all of you listening and understanding how to communicate, because there are some things that you and your wife could do to help, you know, your family better understand African and African-American culture. Anybody else have anything for Perez?
Well, Hildy, again, more a general question, since we're talking about, I don't know if it's race or color. Something that I found difficult as a foreigner coming here and having lived in different places around the world was what terms are acceptable to use. So I personally don't really like the term African American. I think it separates people within a nation, within a nationality, but then I don't know what an appropriate word is. So I know that, so in the UK you can say mixed race, and I think in South Africa if you say mixed race that's really bad, and then here I have no idea, and then I don't know when you're allowed to say black, or people prefer African American, or you know, person of color. I really don't know what the appropriate terms are. What would they be for different, I mean, not just, you know, say black people, but like generally if you were going to make a distinction, if someone was like tanned or I don't know.
Right. And you can, and so that is something, and there are classes that talk about that, because you have to take into consideration, okay, like if you go, Miami's a good place to go to, where you will see someone who is darker than I am, and they will be from somewhere else. Won't be African. Oh. or American. But then my understanding is to ask what would you prefer to be called if you're going to be referring to someone, because I know that Africans like having the tie back to the motherland, just like there are Italian Americans and Japanese Americans. So you're saying African American because we're talking about it here with me, but how do you feel about Mexican American? You know, just go running the gamut of Canadian American. You just wanted to say American.
Yeah, I don't. I think that distinction separates people, to be honest, because in terms of nationality, all those holding an American passport are Americans, regardless of background or distinction, because no American is from here. Americans are.
What about Native Americans?
From outside, they are immigrants. Technically, so you know, why say African American and not German American or Mexican American or something like that? I personally don't like that distinction.
Oh, okay, and you know, and you're saying it like that. Let me tell you, I was in a program with Native American Journalists Association, Asian American Journalists Association, National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and National Association of Black Journalists. Okay, when we would get in our session and we had to introduce ourselves, and I'm talking about probably close to 100 people, you would have Hector get up and say, my parents are, and my grandparents came from Cuba, and my, on my mother's side and on my father's side, they came from Mexico or Puerto Rico or something like that, or Spain. That's the Hispanic one. Then you'd have the Asian one who would say, my parents on my mother's side come from Tokyo, and on my mother's side they come from Shanghai. Then you get the Native American, and they say both my parents come from the Cherokee Nation. Then you get the Black journalists, and we're like, well, my mom's from the South Side of Chicago, and my dad's from Lubbock, Texas. Do you see the difference? There's no tie back to. It's like we didn't exist until we came to America.
Oh, is that how you feel?
That's what it seems like, because we don't know exactly where we came from, because everybody else, for the most part, were able to come of their own volition. We were not. So when we came, we were told you cannot be. You know, our language was taken from us, everything. We just find out where we were from. So we felt, you know, in that big group of people talking about where they were from, there were very few of us who could make that distinction, could make that tie back to where our children came from. My friend, mm-hmm. he's Puerto Rican. If you see him, you're going to call him African-American, really. They're going to call him mm-hmm. African-American, and some may call him Black. But his mom and dad are from Puerto Rico, and he can go back to the Moors and all of that stuff. And, you know, even I'll tell you another term, you will hear people say that Blacks were slaves. And you will hear Black people, that how they say that Black people were slaves.
Yeah.
And you have Black people, they would say they were enslaved Africans because they didn't. They were Africans who were captured and enslaved. They were not slaves first, if you will. So you have
I mean, do you mean the distinction between Africa actually selling? I mean, it was the Africans who sold slaves, unfortunately, to the U.S. They weren't kidnapped.
Oh, you, I beg to differ with you. There's both of that going on.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I was trying to understand, if that distinction was to say some, you know, there was part where it's like a kidnapping, and the other part where actually
Regardless of what they were, before they came to the United States, they were African. And once they came here or to other islands on the way here, they were enslaved. And yes, you know, and people will try and make it a part, you know, like Africans were waiting there to sell their people. What folks did was actually, if you could say that the for lack of a better word right now, think is communicating, the white folks who came over to Africa, they didn't go to the kings and the queens and the, of the villages and stuff like that, to the heads. They went to, and we all had them in all groups around the world, the lowlifes, if you will, the criminals, and you went to a lot of them, and so it was easy for you to get them to engage in some activity like that, which would be called criminal activity because it was kidnapping. And so those were the people you had who were selling, but even if they were not selling, they would have been taking us anyway. They took millions of us from there. You're always going to have that criminal element. You could, if right now, if Africans came to America to take black people back, they would be, it wouldn't be the politicians and the teachers and the doctors and everybody who would be helping capture black people and selling them. It would be some of the people, it would be drug dealers. It would be human traffickers, and that's what was happening there. And, you know, and it's all about understanding, because I know that some Native Americans, you know, they like Native Americans versus other terms that you could call them. But, you know, like there's derogatory Mexican that I hear Mexicans call one another, and that there's the equivalent of nigger in every culture, and there's some, and you have to know that you should not say them. You should know that even when you're giving a speech, you know, people tend to say, they use a totem pole as an example. That's very offensive to Native Americans. Very offensive. So when you're saying, yeah, you're the low man on the totem pole, or you say you're an Indian giver, language is really important. And you read this in your textbook, it talks about language is very important in understanding what is offensive, what can just turn someone off to a presentation that you're giving. And I heard someone who works for CNN say her mom was the low person on the totem pole at the college where she worked, and I saw people looking around the table like, I know she didn't. And you need to understand that there are some things that are offensive, and they may not seem offensive, but they are. And that's all about understanding. But I do think that away from somebody, you could ask them, what would you prefer to be called? Or is this important? But I will tell you one thing that, and Perez, you may have that issue, and I know it is a big issue. When people will come up and maybe ask your children or want to know, I haven't seen them, so I don't know if I could tell, but they want to know, what are they mixed with? Or what are you? You know, I mean, what do you mean, what am I? You know? And then, but people will ask that when they see someone who looks like they may have a combination of, you know, black and brown or yellow and brown or whatever, and they ask very offensive questions, and those are things that you all need to understand as you communicate so that you can say the right thing so that you can not be offensive in communicating. Anybody else with any questions? Anybody else want extra credit?
Yes, sir. Barry Freed wants some extra credit.
Let's go.
All right. My name is Darius Freed. Yesterday, I actually read an article on Vice News that talked about the cure for cancer. Apparently, in a couple of these major clinics around the country, the doctors and the scientists have been using viruses like AIDS, the common flu, measles, all different kinds of viruses to actually go in and fight cancer. And it's really, really neat if you see how the process works, because, you know, depending on the drug, the doctor administers it this way and that. But they've had, like, I want to say they said 175 trials with using the AIDS virus as the, you know, the medicine. And they've, out of the 175, 154 people are in, like, complete remission with no sign of cancer coming back. So it seems like it's really promising, and the medical field is really hyped up for it. They're working on getting it approved through the FDA right now. And, I mean, I don't know. A lot of people have been affected by cancer. I know my mom, well, my stepmom personally, she had cancer, and she was in the ICU for, like, 2 weeks. And, I mean, I don't know. I was really excited to find out the news that, you know, a lot of people's lives are already starting to be changed, and a lot more lives will be changed on a bigger scale here in the future.
Okay.
I don't know how to close the speech out on the phone, because, you know, usually you can do something with your body language, you know, to tell people that it's over and you can't see me. So
You had ended it perfectly. You said that's all. I know some people have some questions for Darius.
Anybody?
Lenora Perez? It's not really a question. It's more like, you know how viruses work, right, and how we survive on things. Usually we get infected first so we can fight it off. Like the flu, it has a live virus in it. And that's how we get immune to it. It's like when we take shots. Most of the stuff has a live virus in it. And like how you were saying, they also try to do breast milk. Breast milk is like it's something else they're trying to do for cancer, and it's been helping a lot. The breast milk has a lot of nutrition and stuff. Then because, you know, breast milk, when the babies get sick, they get that like it changes the formula so they can fight off bacteria and infections too. So
yeah,
it's pretty incredible how things are changing now.
Yeah, man, all this research, man, the science is just getting so good. I feel like, you know, they have more to work with than they have in the past few years. And I don't know, man, technology and science just taking off together at the same time. And so I think it's good for humanity.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because you mentioned the AIDS virus. So you're talking about the percentage of people who you've seen in remission. Did any of them contract the AIDS virus?
No, ma'am. You see, the way that they set it up, you actually cannot get AIDS. That's one of the things that they were telling. Because on the report, there was a little girl, and she had cancer, and she was about to get the treatment. And I was like, well, we don't know if it'll cure cancer, but we know that she won't get AIDS. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
How? All right. I mean, so they gave her HIV, and they were
certain it wouldn't
develop in her. I don't quite understand that.
Yeah,
Especially if she's already immunosuppressed.
I don't think it's the full blown out HIV virus. I think it's just like it's AIDS at the core, but they've re-engineered some of the things, you know, some of the particles, I guess, or whatever you'd say, on the outside, you know, to alter it a little bit for it to do what they need it to do.
Do you know where this was published?
It was on Vice News. They actually, if you have HBO or something, they actually have like a whole documentary on it, like an hour or two long. Yeah. You can check it out on there.
No, I don't have a TV. But you said why?
Yeah. Vice News, VICENEWS.
Oh.
So how many of you would, if you had cancer, you would take a chance with the AIDS virus?
I would. Very soon. I mean, you got cancer. It's going downhill at this point anyways. Is it either you going to run downhill or start going up, you know?
Lenara Press wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No, man.
Okay.
Yeah, Hildy Roland. I do believe in alternative ways. I'm not big on just pharmacology, but if I was going to base my decision on one article or presentation, I don't think that would be very wise.
Okay. All right. Next, anybody else, or can we move on? Anybody check your credit?
Yeah, he'll be Roland.
Let's rock and roll.
All right. I'm Hildy Roland. I did something new this week. So I've been having trouble with my car. My mechanic has had my car for over a month, close to 2 months probably by now. And every time I bring it in, he'd make a repair and it just wouldn't be good. And so I'd bring it back and we would text and I would say, hey, is my car ready? He goes, oh, you know, let me test it a bit more tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, one more day. And I'm Ubering or I'm renting a car and, you know, expenses. Thinking, all right, it's just one more day. So I text him the next day and the same story. He's like, one more day. And it's gotten to the point that one more day is turning into weeks. And my Uber costs are now in the hundreds. I mean, I'm about 400 was last I calculated in all this time with the rental car and the Uber. And I'm upset. I'm angry at this point. What happened last week, I messaged him again. I said, what's going on? What's happening with the car? And he suddenly tells me, oh, I still need to order that part. And I'm sitting there thinking, it took you 3 weeks to tell me stories about tomorrow, and now I find out you haven't even ordered the part. And I also take this personal finance course at Richland, and it's a great course. It's taught me a lot about my legal options here and just sort of, you know, financial stuff. And one of the things that we learned was about small claims court. And I had a class yesterday, and I spoke with my teacher about it, and he said, you know, dude, you have a case here, go do it. And so yesterday I filled out the documents, and I did a ton of research. I looked up how much money it could be. I looked up what information I would need. I looked up what would increase my chances of winning. And when I felt confident, and after I felt confident for speaking with my teacher, I went down to the courthouse and filed a petition to sue him in small claims. It felt like a big deal for me because, you know, being in a different country and not knowing, or having felt that I didn't know things like that, and then realizing that I learned them through this course, or I was able to do this on my own, and I had the courage, and I did the research, and hopefully, you know, at some point I'll get my car back, and I'll get reimbursed for my financial loss as well. But that will be 6 to 8 weeks from now, apparently, so we'll see.
Did you know? Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah. No, that was it. I was just asking for some luck.
So, did you know this mechanic beforehand?
Mm-mm. No, it was my mother-in-law found him, and took me there, and we didn't really know him. He seemed like a good guy, but he's obviously messing me around.
Okay. And what you have done is you have empowered yourself, and too often we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is shafting you, and so I would like on a personal note for you to give me an update on it and let me know, because sometimes people will abuse you, and we need to let them understand that there will be consequences and repercussions for their act. Mm-hmm.
So do you have any advice to share right now that you would be able to share with me?
I would say you're going to court, and there are consumer reporters that work for, especially for television stations, and people don't like television cameras coming around.
Oh, gosh.
And so that would be one of my steps. I would contact some, and that's what I was saying, you know, that I would do. I would contact some of my journalist friends and say, hey, this is going on. Can you help her out? And I assure you that usually when they get a call from a television station, they start acting in an entirely different way.
Mm.
And that's what you want, because people will shaft you. And so we have to, I like that you've taken, you know, it into your own hands to a certain extent, because they will dog you out.
Mhm.
Yeah. Anybody?
Yeah, I gotta learn to stand up for myself. You know, like it's something I gotta learn in life.
Because if he were paying for all of those expenses and everything, he would like if he were offering you a loaner while he had your car or something like that, that's costing him. He would be treating you differently. But he's gone past the point of return at all. And he needs to suffer the consequences. So when you have a court date, even if I love going to court, I told y'all that. And so you need to keep me apprised of what's going on, okay?
Will do.
Lenara Perez, I have a question. Is it a shop or just more like an individual person that's doing your work?
It's a shop, but it's a sole proprietor. I mean, it's a sole proprietorship with an official, with a shop and a sign and all of that.
Okay, so there are a license.
Are
there licensed, a mechanic license, or are they using one license to branch off that one person's license?
Huh.
Because
I don't
so
know.
Easy
I know.
To...
I mean, tell me more about that.
Because each person can be individual and licensed, each mechanic. But if they're not, then usually they use one main person and they branch off that person. Just like how you are an electrician, you can't be an electrician for 3 years, so use that one person's license to be kind of certified underneath them. So that person that has a license is the one that can get in trouble more than the person that's doing your car. You understand that? Because they're using his license to be a mechanic if it has a shop. But that's one thing you always have to do when you research stuff. Like anywhere, anything you do, you need to figure out are the BPA approved, or I mean, how well are the ratings? Do people understand that? You know, people post things all the time. You know, how well is the company doing? You know, like that's the one thing my wife always taught me to do, is always research. Even like things I buy, so like, oh yeah, you need to figure out what, you know, you need to look it up and see if it's good quality or if it's, you know, or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always good to have people that knows information about what you're trying to do. You know, like someone that knows about knowledge about cars, because, you know, people always ask questions. Like, okay, so can you tell me what's wrong with it? Can you show me? Because they're always going to, a lot of mechanics will show you what's wrong with it and they expect
mm-hmm.
you. And a lot of them, like, I know when I get my cars done, I ask questions, and I always tell them, okay, so the part's going to be here Wednesday, and I'll make sure, like, what part number it is, and then I take that part number and take it home and see if it's the right, you know, how much it really is, are they ripping me off? You know, you understand what's not, like, how that is helpful. Or anywhere you go, you need someone with that knowledge to understand. You know, like someone with a computer, if you can try to fix your computer, your phone, you know, stuff like that. And it's all really helpful.
Yeah,
that's great advice.
It's sad to say, but oftentimes there's some industries where it pays to have a mentor with you.
Yes. I was about to say we have a very female-dominant family on both sides. And, you know, my mother-in-law was the only one that I knew to go to in this situation, and that would be the height of the knowledge in the family here. And it would have been nice to have, not to be sexist, but I think to have a male friend or family member who was more savvy. I guess that is sexist, but usually men are more savvy around cars to help out. And even the advice or information that you just shared, Perez, I find that very useful.
And my wife sees that genie all the time. I mean, like,
when
she takes the car.
Can someone hear me?
Yeah.
Dana?
Yes.
Welcome to the party.
I've been here in school waiting. Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
I totally forgot. I'm so sorry about the interruption.
Okay, crack is whack. Okay, remember that, okay? Your lesson for today, crack is whack, okay? But we're talking with Hilde. Again, this is where your communication skills come in also, because I don't know if you knew what was wrong with your car, but if you do a little bit of research, sometimes coming in and the way you talk and the way, you know, like if you had a folder and you let the person know that you know something, and you may not know much. But you say just enough to let them know that and sometimes you have to fudge when you're dealing in a male-dominated arena.
Mm.
And even for me, even when I go and buy a car, usually I have somebody refer me to, like I've had commissioners or I've had the mayor call and tell them Cheryl's coming to get a car, take care of her. And I remember one time that our former mayor, he saw the car that I bought, and I told him how much I was paying a month and everything. He said, he said, golly, you got a good deal. Did you date him or something? And I said, no, I told him I was dating you. So you try to work it when I haven't gone in with someone to buy a car, usually I go in and I say, well, you know what? I said, my credit union has approved me for such and such and such, and I'm not spending more than that on a car. And then they try to work to that deal because it's all in your confidence. And these are some of the things that you learn, even as you get public speaking. And when you walk into a room, you got to walk in like you know what you're talking about. When you get up to the microphone, you have to look like you know what you're talking about, even if you don't. Even if you do not. The other night, I accepted an award for a former student that was in a workshop with me at Lincoln High School in Dallas, and I didn't know if they would ask me to speak or not when I accepted the award, but guess what? I was prepared. I knew if I had to say something, I was ready. But I was prepared to say something and be really pretty profound, actually. And that's what you want to get to, a point where you can take the microphone with confidence.
I have a question. This is Nadina.
Okay.
It's Sarah. Okay, So has there been any times when you've given, like, a speech or an interview that you, like, forget about what you're about to say? How do you fake it? How do you fake that you forgot?
You don't fake
it. So you won't look bad or...
Okay, you won't fake it. I will tell you this. I was in college and I was giving a speech and before an auditorium full of people, and I didn't realize till later that I had a brain freeze and that I did not, I lost it in doing a presentation. But now you put that in because people have been in that position before, and you're like, oh, look at here, I just had a brain freeze. You know, I had a senior moment, you know. Mm-hmm. And you make a joke about it, and some people say if you forget it wasn't that important. That's not necessarily so. You forget important things also. And so have I had that happen to me? Yep. And you know what can make that happen for me? A distraction.
Okay.
Someone me walking in the room, or if I see somebody doing something, I want to say, "What the heck are you doing?" So you have to be really, really focused, but you have to understand that it's going to happen, and say. And then, have you never heard someone speaking and then they say something and then they lose it and then they say, "Oh." And it comes back to them later, and you just hope it comes back. But you have to understand that most people have been where you are. If you're up there speaking in front of folks, and you are going to have times when you don't, when something slips past you, and you just try to play catch up and try to say something profound.
Now, for Rico, I don't know if he's in the line.
Yes.
Okay, Rico, since you work at a TV station or TV channel, has that ever happened to you? Like, you're in a segment and do you forget something or not quite because you have, like, your cards in front of you?
Well, we do have cards in front of us, but we have to, like, before we get on the set, we have to, like, do research and try to, well, not memorize, but to know about a certain topic in case you might forget. So it does happen, but when it happens, you have to continue. You have to... Not fake it, like, not fake it, but, like, to know what you're talking about, even if you move from one subject to the other.
You don't have teleprompters?
Say
Victor,
that again?
You don't use teleprompters, Victor?
Well, since it's a local TV channel, we don't. We usually have like a board, and we write on it.
One thing that can happen to all of you, and you need to be prepared for it, is that sometimes when after you give a speech, and that's why I'm trying to get you all to answer questions and things. Lots of times you want to be able to anticipate the question. And so that's why, like, for example, when we were talking about Peter Pan the other day and we asked Hildy, where was it? And that's something that you hope to anticipate so that you minimize the number of I don't know. Or that's a good question. Now, I was on the air one time and I was talking about there was a serial rapist in, like, North Dallas. Further north, like maybe Plano, that area. And a caller called in and asked, had there been a reward offered? And in everything, I had not thought about that. I had not thought about a reward. more than offered. And so when you go back and you listen to the tape, there's a pause. There's a little bit of dead air. Well, I'm like, it was like a light bulb. I'm like, no, there wasn't. And that was something. But then I came back with, that's something to think about, or that's a good point. And that's what you do. One thing, have you ever heard, you know, when people are on television and they ask a question, you will hear a person either say, thank you for that question, or that's a good question. Those are just ways of giving a person an opportunity to get their answer together. That's a very good question. I never thought about that. And you know what? And then by then they have come up with an answer for you. And that's something you have to get good at, because it can throw you off. Darius, yes. Darius be at parties when he's participating, but that's okay.
One more thing is, like, if you're in an interview and somebody asks you a question and, you know, you forgot what you were going to say, just act like you didn't hear them and just ask them to repeat themselves, you know, and then it'll come back to you.
And even if you don't, sometimes they'll ask you a question and you don't understand it. When I've been on the witness stand, I played the dumb, and I shouldn't say dumb blonde, but anyway, I've asked, can you repeat the question, please? And that gives me a chance to get it together. Or I ask for water or whatever. But you're right, in an interview, and we are going to have those. We're going to look at interviewing, because you know you have a mock job interview. And there are a few of us, so we'll get through it very, very quickly. And but you, there are things that you can do that help you stall, if you will, but it doesn't look like you're stalled. And people expect, like, people can expect you to have a coughing fit and someone bring you some water or something like that, and that gives you a chance to get it together. But everyone usually has been in that predicament, or either they don't want to be in that predicament, so they will show a little compassion to you. Real quickly, anybody else want extra credit?
I want extra credit.
I want extra credit.
Miss Smith, okay. I have to go. I start my second job today. I gotta go. I can't be late. I'm sorry. I had a great time. Much love.
Oh, really?
You see how you just made us get. Some of us could really, and I'm just like, no, he didn't. Darius, go work. Where are you going? He's gone. Okay, I'll talk later. You know, he could have said that a long time ago, but anyway. But we have Rico and Medina said you want extra credit?
Yes.
Real quickly.
This is Victor Rico, and a few moments ago I found out that a daughter of a former friend of mine is having surgery today. She has cerebral palsy.
Oh.
She cannot walk, and I'm debating whether I should call her or not, since we have not talked for almost 2 months. We stopped talking because we were working at a restaurant. She was the manager, and I was her assistant. So the setting in a job is very different from, you know, real life, from where we, like, from being friends. So I wasn't used to her bossing me around because I knew her differently. But once we started working together, things change. And since then, we stopped talking. But now that her daughter is going through that, should I forget about the past and call her, or should I ignore that I saw that post? What should I do? That's my question.
You always want to do the right thing, and you don't want circumstances to make you look at what you're doing. I would always tell my kids, because they did something, like they may have told one person, I'm not going to do my chores. So I say, okay, would you tell everybody else you're not going to do your chores? And they say, no. I said, well, then that shows you that what you said was wrong. You have a situation where you were in a work environment and there was a problem. Let me tell you, it's not personal, it's business. And you have to learn, everyone has to learn how to separate business from personal.
True.
And so then you look at what is going on. If y'all were friends before, you don't know, you could have probably hurt her feelings by not being a friend because she's doing her job. And then you may have been at the job not doing what you were supposed to do because you thought y'all were friends. And yes, you are friends, but this is business. Should you reach out to her? You should reach out. And other people, and I want to hear from some of the others in the class, do you think that he should reach out and say, no, one thing you don't want to do is say, is there anything I can do? Because when people are going through tragedy, and that's the thing, when my mom died and people were like, what do you need? What do you need? I'm like, I don't know. You know, and so for me, if someone dies now, if somebody in one of my friends or associates' family dies, I usually will call and say, hey, I look at what skills I have, and I say, hey, I'm a good writer. You want me to write the obituary? You want me to edit the obituary? And those are things I offer, things I know how to do, or I go and I know that a lot of people are going to be visiting at home or whatever. I'll go take some water or toilet tissue or paper plates, things that I know they're going to need.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with Mrs. Smith.
Instead of saying, can I do something or is there anything I can do, think of something that you can do or ask somebody, what would you do in a situation? What will they need or something? And just go and take it and let it be an offering, because it also shows that you are a bigger person and that you understand whatever was going on at work, it was business.
I think that's a very good point. When my father passed, I found it overwhelming when people would come to me with what you said, what can I do for you, because it just added pressure to me. And I find often when, you know, things happen that are emotionally difficult to deal with, a lot of people actually reach out because they don't know how to deal with it and they're trying to soothe themselves. And right. I think it's dangerous if you're trying to reach out because maybe you feel guilt or you know, you still have some issues around that past relationship. I find that doesn't help or soothe the person, versus if you come from an approach of giving and genuinely want to do something for her sake and not for your own emotions, it comes across very differently. And as our teacher just said, if you see something that you know would actually soothe her and something that you can give, then it's useful to her. If not, it's probably more for yourself, and not to be mean in any way, but if someone's in that situation, the last thing they want to do is have to deal with a past issue as well, you know. They have their own stuff to deal with.
I also agree. I think there's two sides of it. Like, some people can feel overwhelmed, they keep asking you about, okay, what can I do for you? I think that maybe in this position that Rico is in, I feel that he should reach out and just say, you know what, because you know about it. But I also think that you shouldn't bring the issue back, like, at the time of sharing, like, your concern, right, over her family member, and just state it, you know, like, well, I'm here if you need anything, and
you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think that at the end we just have to empathize. I don't know if that's the right word, empathize. Empathize with the person about with their pain, because we never know what can happen to us, you know, at some point. And you know, like I think it's great when somebody shows, like, you know, you reach out to a person with a love, and you know, sharing love to them in any kind of language, just says a lot about your character. You know, versus, you know, holding to what happened between the relationship, you know. And I think that love mends a lot of wounds. And we should just cry with those who are crying and rejoice with those who are rejoicing. I say because, you know, I was, it was something similar to what happened to Rico, but this friend of mine, for some reason, I don't know why there was always friction between us, and I think about 2 years ago, a year ago, her husband passed away from cancer, and I think she left with this image of me, like, that I didn't like her, or something like that. But it wasn't that. I think it was just my age, and I was just being immature. So I found out about the death of her husband, and I went over to the funeral. And, I mean, it hurt me because, you know, I have known this person all my life, and then this tragedy happened. And just the simple act of me going, I think it showed a lot about my character to her. You know, and nothing was brought up or anything. I think we were just exchanging words of my, how sorry I was about her loss. And that's how it ended, you know. And I think up to now, I may message her, like on Facebook or comment on several stuff. And to me, it seems it's just like as if we were always friends, you know, like a clean friendship.
Right, so, and that's what you have to think about, that communication. And if you look in your book, and the reason why I wanted you all to do extra credit so you would get comfortable with speaking in front of each other, but it also gives me a chance to tell you what's in the book without going word for word with the book and everything. And that's something about the communication, because sometimes that's when a nonverbal communication comes, and that's when strong interpersonal skills come into play, because you knowing when to say it, where to say it, and how to say it, and how not to say anything. You just let nonverbal communication work for you. You know, when, you know, do you go up to somebody and do you ask them, how are you doing? You know, and one day you're going to get one of those grief-stricken people who say, how the hell do you think I'm doing? You know, I just lost my child or something, you know. It may be the only thing you can say, but it comes in a way that is offensive to people. Offensiveness to me may be different from someone else. I can't stand for someone to come and tell me someone in a better place. Yeah. Like, how the hell do you know? Or telling me, you know, they will say things that are supposed to be soothing, and they are not soothing. That's the art of communication, being able to say, you know, to think about what things really are receptive to people. You have to put yourself in the predicament.
And I think most of the times, like, when the person is grieving, I think that at that point, there's not really the right words to tell the person. And I think that just by being by their side, not saying anything, is more than enough than what you can say with words. You know, for example, I work at a hospital, and I mean, I work in the intensive care unit, and there's a lot of tragedies that happen there at times. And I mean, all these family members are broken, and sometimes they're all by themselves, and
I sometimes don't know what to tell them, and I just don't say anything, and I'm just there, and I just give them a hug, and I let them cry, and yeah, I guess it's all, there's all kinds of.
And that is a form of communication. You have to see what works. You know, what is going, because some things will set people off. Sometimes it's the simplest things that people ask, or they will say to you, you know, that, you know, like, I don't want anybody to come and tell me to cry. So I'm looking at my, excuse me. So you have to learn, that's the art of communication with folk, being able to communicate in any arena, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I even saying I don't know what to say. One of the things that is, when people come up to me, if they say, I bet you don't remember me, oh, that just pisses me off, because then I'll say, yeah, I remember you, and they'll say, from where? And I'm like, oh, crap, you're going to take me here. And it becomes a guessing game. Don't do that to people. Don't put them, because, number one, you don't know what they're going through in life. They may be suffering from dementia. And you're going to put them, I bet you don't remember me. And I'm like, no, I don't. And then their feelings are hurt because you don't remember them. And a few times I've had somebody come up and say, you're Cheryl Smith, aren't you? And I'll say, yeah. I bet you don't remember me. I say, okay, now you just came up and asked me who I was, so evidently you didn't remember me. Oh, no, I knew it was you. I just kind of know that that is the art of communication, learning how to communicate with people so that when they see you coming, they won't try to go in another direction.
Yeah.
Okay, we have, who else said, did Abigail say she wanted, or Medina said she wanted?
Yes, I wanted. Well, the earlier today, I was thinking about, because yesterday, I think it was like 2 days ago, I saw Obama's speech that he gave at, where was it? Australia, Germany, I don't know, somewhere over there. I don't recall that well.
Turkey?
Yeah, I think so.
I know it was Turkey a few days ago.
And I was just looking at the body language whenever he has given a speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the time I focus on the body language, because I was asking myself, what is actually the right way about your body language when you're giving a speech? Because I have seen that a lot of people use their hands when they're speaking. And I really admire those that can speak and stay with a very calm attitude. And just like Obama, like most of his speeches, he always carries himself so calm and so clean, the way he speaks and his body language. I'm like, I hope that I can, whenever I speak, I can carry myself like that, you know, like a clean body language, because just the way Obama speaks, he's really able to convince people of what he's saying. and then I see the body languages of all these people, like the ones that are running for president that with our campaign, and I see their body language, and, you know, Donald Trump is all over the place with the way he's talking, and I'm like, this guy's just a mess. I don't know. I think I get more distracted by the way he carries himself on than what he's actually saying.
And, you know, he may be doing that intentionally, but go ahead to your point.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was just wondering, what's the right body language you should use when you're doing a speech, or you're in front of a crowd, you know, speaking? Because it can be distracting. It is distracting, some stuff that people do.
It is, and I can tell you that studying the art of, I have had people, use their hands, and sometimes I will use mine, and I've heard, and I've even used to say that's the African in me, or I've even heard Spanish-speaking people say that it was the Spanish in them or Italian, that, we're expressive people, we use our hands. But guess what? For some people, you using your hands is very slight. Mm-hmm. And there are cultures that you won't see using their hands a lot. Those cultures will be like Asian or Native American. They aren't very expressive with their hands. But we have to be really careful. So then you modify that. You look at, you practice. And I don't know if they told Victor to do this in broadcasting, but they're told to get in front of a mirror and read what you're going to say. Like you have script, so what you're doing is you're reading and you're watching your facial expression. And so then you can modify some of them. Now, I will tell you this, with some people like Donald Trump, I think some of the times he is intentionally trying to throw you off and get you focus more on what he's doing rather than what he's saying. I really do believe that.
Because the reason why, now that you're thinking about something right now, back home in the valley, there's this TV station. I think it's called, I don't know, it's a Mexican station or some, I don't know, but channel. And there's this girl, the young girl, that she would do like the forecast. And this girl was all over the place when she's doing the forecast. I'm like, this girl looks like she's modeling or something, but her hands were all up in the air and she would move and her body would move. I'm like, every time she comes up, like, I don't even pay attention to what she's saying because she's just so loud in the way she's in front of the camera. I'm like, I don't know anything about, being in front of a camera, but I think it's like a little bit of, like, too much what she's doing.
And you have men who are used in a hiring position, and there's some man who thinks that is so cute and hot.
Yes.
Essentially, that's what we're dealing with. But you all need to come up. It's something you need to practice. You need to practice. Even there are people, I'm sure you take interviews with people who say, oh, no, that's not my good side.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they have looked and they have studied. They get in front of the mirror and say, or they look at pictures of themselves and they're looking at presenting themselves in the best way possible. And that's what you want to do even with their speeches. There are some people who hold on to the podium, and they may say, the best way for me to give a presentation is to hold on to the podium. That's good until you get to the place where, guess what, you don't have a podium. Hill Harper is an actor. He was on CSI, I think it was, and he's a short guy, and he tends to, when he's speaking, he takes the microphone and he walks out and he gets off the stage and walks in the audience. That's where he likes to engage people. You find what works for you,
mm-hmm.
and you have to feel comfortable doing it. Walking mm-hmm. around and talking to people. I saw there's an actress, Debbie Reynolds, who's like 80. She did the same thing. You have to find what works for you. You have to find what helps you project better. When I run for office in organizations I belong to, somebody lost their call. I always stand when I'm answering a question, because I'm standing, because guess what? It helps me project. Mm-hmm. And then I can get closer to the audience and I can make them feel me. What I'm trying to do is to get them to feel me and to
and to be on one accord with me. So if I'm sitting there, depending on the setting, if I'm answering questions and other people are answering questions with me, I'll get up and walk around in front of the table and come out and talk to them. Some things happen. You know, one time they had a mic attached to me, and I when I got up, the piece that was clipped onto me fell. And I said something like, oh, look at here. I am very familiar with this type of equipment. I don't know why this is happening. Something like that, but I just put it into what I was saying because people know that things happen. And they know that things happen. But you have to come up. You have to come up with what makes you look comfortable. I will tell you, it worked, Tildy, when you were sitting on a desk talking that time because you looked comfortable and it was engaging. It works sometimes, but it, you have to know your audience. You have to, somebody needs to mute. You have to know your audience. In order for you to say what will work and what doesn't work. And it's even down to the dress. Believe me, it may sound trite or contrived or whatever, but don't think they didn't tell Michelle Obama to change the way she dressed on a campaign trail. She used to dress, you go back and you all go back and look, you will see she dressed different. She dressed more conservative in suits and everything. Then she started wearing things where she showed her arms, where she was more feminine, if you will. And the reason why is because they told her, you know, basically she looked really strong. And you can't look strong next to your man. You can't look, give people a possibility you may be stronger than your man when it's your man running for office. and then she has to, just look at it. I mean, and you saw something similar happen on Scandal. She has to look, if you saw President Obama, he started like putting his hand in the crack of her, not in a crack, but in the, like in the valley, guys, in that part of her back, right above her hip, above her butt, and he would hold her here, and he did things because he had to show the world, he had to look like he was having sex with his wife. He had to look strong, and it, he had to look like, yeah, I got a strong woman, but I got her under control to a certain extent. And so that's what you look at, just what is the image that you're trying to project. Sometimes I want to be soft, sometimes I want to be hard. When I say I accomplished what I wanted to do, and it's something, it's a work in progress because you're constantly changing and you're looking. It's your message. If you're dealing with something with your work, you want to look like you work. You know, my former students who I mentored, and I'm going to let you go in a minute, she wanted to know, she was graduating, getting her doctorate, and she wanted to know, should she wear jeans and sneakers under her robe? And so people were telling her, sometimes your friends do not know. You just got to realize you don't need to be asking them because they were on Facebook saying, yeah, girl, do you wear what you want to wear and all of this stuff and everything. And I told her, I said, let me tell you something. And I said it right on Facebook in front of them. I said, there are so many men and women who will never walk across the stage to get any type of degree, but they helped you get there. If not, anything but them, dress up, put on the heels, and go and represent the men and women who couldn't be there
or whose shoulders you stand on. And so she's like, thank you for putting it into perspective for me. Because she didn't need to be going, she wasn't going to a doctor's picnic. She's going to get a doctorate degree, something that all of you there know is not easy. And so, and it says a lot about things, you know, and then there's you'd rather be overdressed than underdressed. Because if you're overdressed, have layers on, you can take off some of the things. So this is something you need to consider. And you need to consider, you know, she may have gotten a news camera may have come up to her after the ceremony, and she has her robe off wanting to talk to her, and she looks like she's on the block. So that's really important for you to think about your image and what your image is going to be like, and how you're going to, you know, when you're at work, when you're meeting with a bunch of little kids and giving them a pep talk, that will help you go when you're doing an interview. You're going in a courtroom. You don't want to go in a courtroom looking like you committed the crime. You know, you want to go in there looking like, listen, he don't look like he could have done that, or she doesn't look like she could have done that. That's all you have to play the game. That's what you're doing with communication. You are playing the game. Now we are going to talk to when between now and either on Monday, I'm going to give you a study guide so that you can take a quiz on. So we can see if everybody shows up on time, Funky Cole Medina, on Monday, so that we can have Wednesday off to get ready for Thursday, or we'll see what happens. But I will tell you this: if based on your participation, either whether it was you applying for extra credit or you're participating in the discussion, if I had to give everybody a grade right today, and it's not a matter of giving a grade, but your participation, and everything, the majority in the class would have an A. Because some people can teach. I can't teach going word for word in the book. I can apply things and we can talk about it. And then when we go back and look at the book, we'll see that we discuss those things. And you are participating in the discussion and asking questions and trying to learn from that. I can tell, just like when Medina said she gave the speech, and she realized that she ended it wrong. You know, that the lessons are in doing. So we will talk on Monday. If you have any questions or comments or concerns before then, you can call me. You can also, there's a way you can also go back in and listen to this if you want to online. And you probably don't want to do that, but if you have been. But when we come in, the chapters were 1 to 6, and I'll have your study guide ready for chapters 1 to 6. Also, some information. You don't need, I'm telling you now so you can get prepared for it. But when I get
or enter your alternate ID.
Well, I'm kind of upset right now because I ordered my book and I have not received my book.
Okay, well, they need to give you the refund. But I will give you everything that you need. What you all need to be working on how to get your resume. Okay.
What is going on in the background?
I'm just making a call.
What? I'm sorry, I'm buying something.
I muted somebody and it stopped. 748?
No, that's not me.
I'm not going to let you all go, but work on your resume because.
Work on our resume?
Yeah, because you're going to have a job interview, so I want to see a resume.
Oh, okay.
Okay, that is not.
Someone has to mute his or her phone.
Okay,
who's ringing?
I want to see. Wait a minute. Listen. You stopped ringing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, whose number is 214-429-7456?
Well, they're probably muted right now.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty loud. I'm sorry. Me, okay. Medina.
Okay, I need your your resume. You can work on your resume, and if you have a resume for me on Monday, we won't have class on Wednesday, okay?
We will okay. have class on Monday?
If you
online, yeah.
Can get me your, yes, you will have class online, but if I have your resume, if 100% of the class has their resume in my inbox before class on Monday, and I'm saying before Sunday, then I will. We won't have class on Wednesday.
Do we send it to your Gmail account or your Yahoo?
I'm Gmail or AOL. Send it to both of them.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let you all go. I know you have things to do, and I will talk to you. You can call me anytime, and I will talk to you on Monday. But please, y'all, I mean, I'm not saying that your resume has to be perfect for perfection. So there can be changes made to it, but submit something. And I'm going to contact Gary. So I'm going to send a note out to everybody. So check your check the El Centro addresses also, okay?
I have a question. So we're not having class over the phone on Monday, right?
Thank you for shopping with us.
Yes, you are. You're having
over the phone or in the classroom?
Over the phone.
Okay.
Call in on Monday, okay?
All right, cool.
Call in on Monday, but don't call in if you've not sent your resume by Sunday.
Okay.
and then you just be ready to call in on Wednesday because you will have class on Wednesday also.
All right.
If you don't.
Over the phone or in the class?
We hope not at all because all you got to do is turn in your darn resume.
I'm all over the place.
Monday we have class. Monday,
okay.
I will say everybody turned in their resume so we don't have on Wednesday.
Okay.
If everybody does not turn in their resume, I'm going to be very, very, very angry, and there will be consequences and repercussions.
All right, guys, let's all turn in our resume.
There we go.
Resume. So I'm going to, you see, anyway, I don't know, we're missing Stefania and Eva, and Manuel hasn't been back to another class, but I will send it to everybody, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, go out and do something for somebody else in the world other than yourself.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good one and call me if you need me.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
All right. Bye.